But one and the same Spirit works all these things, distributing to each one individually as he wills. Verse 10. We left off with verse 9. To another faith by the same Spirit, to another gift of healings by the same Spirit. And then we picked it up here. To another, the working of miracles. To another, prophecy. To another, discerning of spirits. To another, different kinds of tongues. To another, interpretation of tongues. But one and the same Spirit works all these things, distributing to each one individually as he wills. What we've looked at so far, verse 8, word of wisdom. Verse 8, again, word of knowledge. Verse 9, gift of faith. And then gift of healings. We covered those last week. And then to another, working of miracles. Miracles is the word dunamis in the Greek, and it just means strength, power, ability, moral power. The ability to do something supernatural. In Acts chapter 3, verse 6, Peter and John heal a man born lame. He was crippled. And remember, he's wanting gold, and Peter says, hey, silver and gold I don't have, but what I do have, I give to you. And he says, arise. And he picked him up, and his feet were made well, and he's walking, not just limping along, but actually jumping up and down, because he's excited, because he's never walked his entire life, obviously. That's one example. Acts 14:8, Paul and Barnabas, different duo, heal a man born crippled as well. In John 12:37, one thing about miracles, because some people always say, oh, if only I could see a miracle, then I'd believe. You could do something crazy in front of me, then I become a Christian. You know, but that never happens, because even Jesus did all kinds of miracles, and they still crucified him. And he would even rebuke people, because he's like, well, you're following me not because of what I'm saying, but because the miracles you've seen. That's the only reason you're doing this. Miracles balance his ministry, but they always pulled people to him. The goal, like, miracles weren't the end of themselves. He used those to reinforce his ministry, what he was saying, what he came to do, which is to die for us. And John 12:37, but although he had done so many signs before them, they did not believe in him. So don't get all trumped up on miracles. Can God do them still? Totally. God can do all kinds of miracles. I think what happened to Erica is an example of a miracle. It's not normal for tumors, and this doctor has seen everything. She was astounded. Anytime you can astound a doctor who does crazy surgeries, like operating on babies inside mama's wombs and all, that's crazy. She's seen everything. She hadn't seen anything like this. So that's an example of a miracle. They still are in existence, but all I'm saying is you don't need to put so much weight on them. So often people are so miracle hungry, always looking for signs and omens and things like that. Not how we need to be at all. At the last men's conference, we teamed up with Petaluma, and a guy was invited. And he was just telling me about this touch of the Holy Spirit he had gotten 20 years ago. And he's been to church for 20 years wanting that same touch. And he just hasn't had it yet. But that's not where you go. You don't go to church just to get some jolt, some supernatural shock or anything like that. And he was kind of disappointed because it hadn't happened. Well, God chooses to work like this sometimes, and sometimes he doesn't. It's totally dependent on God. And again, it's a gift, but it's a gift that is Spirit-led. There's no one who can give themselves the title a miracle worker. It's something that God does when he wants to do it. To another, prophecy. Prophetia, the root word means, in the Greek writings, it's an interpreter of oracles and of other hidden things. Much like Elijah or Elisha in the Old Testament, people would go to these men and they want to hear something from God. A prophet declares the oracles of God to men. So a prophet usually represents God to people. A priest represents the people to God. A prophet today is one moved by the Spirit of God, is his spokesman, and who solemnly declares to men what he has received by inspiration, especially concerning future events, and in particular such as those relate to the cause of the kingdom of God and to human salvation. Agabus was a popular prophet in Acts. Two times he's mentioned prophesying, and in one he prophesies exactly what's going to happen to Paul if he goes to Jerusalem. As you know, Paul's not determined. He goes to Jerusalem anyway. Prophet is someone who can foretell future events. I know that's not a dead gift, because as I shared last week, I've been prophesied over 3 or 4 times, and everything more or less has come to pass, and the person never knew me, never saw me, and if you happen to be around someone with that gift, you can expect some crazy things like that to happen. It is very much in existence, and it can happen when a pastor is teaching. I think sometimes when they're filled with the Spirit, they can say things that maybe are particularly things you're going through. A lot of times if I've spoken in larger venues, I'll have people come up and they're like, whoa, you brought up something that I'm totally, totally going through. Or I'll share something about modeling in Europe, and I'll meet someone who's in modeling right now, or I'll meet a mom who's been distraught because her son, this happens a lot, is modeling, and she didn't know there was such a thing as called Models for Christ, and she's freaking out in tears because she's so encouraged now because there's actually something she can refer her child to. You know, things like that happen also. It's all under this whole realm of prophecy, declaring something future-oriented a lot of the time, maybe something you can apply in the future as well. To another, discerning of spirits. Now, this one's kind of a little more vague, but diakrisis is what discerning means, and that is a distinguishing or judging. In 1 Corinthians 5, we are to judge one another. opposite of popular. What people believe is, oh, you can't judge me. Oh, can't judge me. Bible says can't judge me. Judge not lest you be judged. But they don't read 1 Corinthians 5, which clearly says that you are to judge, I'll say it again, you are supposed to judge one another in the church. I don't mean condemn people. I mean you need to sharpen one another. That's what we're here for. If your friend is a Christian and he's being dumb, it is up to you to point out the fact that he or her is being dumb. That's what God's called you to do. You're supposed to sharpen one another. So often in the church, everyone wants to be PC. Bro, go ahead, smoke all the weed you want. I won't say anything. It's all good. No, it's not all good. It's stupid. And you're not supposed to do that. And anyone who, oh, cool, man, you're hooking up with that girl. Right on, bro. I'll pray for you. No, you're supposed to rebuke and be like, hey, you're not supposed to do that. That's wrong. You can't be blessed by God if you continue in that. You know what the Bible says? Remember when 1 John was gnarly? Remember what he said? Now by this we know that we know him, and we keep his commandments. He who says, I know him and does not keep his commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. I've had to drop that on some friends sometimes. Like, ooh, you're kind of living in a pattern of sin, and I'm worried for you because of this verse. Bang. And it's always in a loving manner, but we're supposed to be sharpening one another. Why? Because Satan is very deceptive, and sin spreads very fast. So if you don't deal with it in the church, guess what? It spreads throughout the church, and pretty soon it's running rampant like a cancer, doing all kinds of damage. So the context of this, and my wife has this gift. I don't have this. I'm kind of like dumb, love everybody. Oh, no, are you sure? He seems so nice. And she's like, I've got a bad feeling about this person. Not always, but sometimes God will like tell her stuff, and she'll tell me, I'm like, oh, I don't think so. She's always right. So pretty soon if she says, I'm like, all right, I'll watch the person. So often it happens like that. You have all kinds of sketchy people want to be counselors. This one guy. You ever see Dukes of Hazzard, old Dukes of Hazzard, Uncle Jesse? He always wore the overalls, and he seemed all nice. That's this old guy, and he wanted to be a counselor. I'm like, oh, he's like Uncle Jesse. How bad can Uncle Jesse be? Uncle Jesse's cool. If you're too young, you have no idea what I'm talking about. He was this kind of burly guy who was like Bo and Luke Dukes, and grandpa or some, or uncle, hence the name Uncle Jesse. This guy seemed all nice, and I'm like, oh, he seems like a sweet guy. And he's like, hey, I'd like to be a counselor. I'm like, oh, you're kind of old. Usually we like younger ones. Oh, pray. Oh, okay, sure. You know, he said he's a violin teacher. I'm like, how bad can a violin teacher be? And then he just started being creepy. Like, give, like, long side hugs to girls. And he said something like one of the female girls I worked with. He's like, oh, you're so pretty, you make me want to stumble. And I'm like, whoa, okay, Uncle Jesse, we got to talk here. And I had to can the guy, but there was a creepy vibe. That was so obvious, I couldn't miss that one. I don't think that was necessarily a gift. It's the ability to distinguish between someone who has the Spirit of God and someone who has what's called the spirit of the Antichrist. If you look at 1 John 4, you'll see that. You see, Satan is very good, and he always works through people. You've heard me say that a lot. He uses people, and Jesus uses people. They both use people to accomplish their own means. Satan uses people to pull down and sidetrack people. Jesus uses people to build up and edify people. They have the same goal. They always work through people. So Satan will always, and he's even described as an angel of light. He's deceptive. He's sneaky. He's a liar. He comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And I think a lot of times people will infiltrate churches, and they've got ulterior motives. Their goal is just to bring it down. Thank God in our little fellowship, as it's doing what it's doing these last 2 years, I've had to deal with several people like this. Where I've had to remove people from the church because I can tell they're up to something that's not good, and my wife's usually warned me about them, fortunately, and their fruit kind of manifests itself. Acts 8:18 is an example where Peter rebukes Simon. Simon sees Peter doing all these things, and he offers him money. Hey, here's some money. I want to learn how to do this. But he wanted to learn how to do these gifts and miracles so he could lift up himself. It wasn't to benefit people or to serve God. A gift of discerning of spirits is someone who can kind of say, I don't have a good feeling about this person. I've seen this taken where everybody thinks everybody's, it borderlines paranoia, where everybody thinks they're hearing from God. Oh, that person's wrong. And it becomes judgmental and off. That's the danger of it. However, if someone is really walking with the Lord, spending time with the Lord, and they come up to me and say, hey, watch that person because I've got to check in my spirit about them. I heed it and I do watch it and I do listen. So you could have that gift if you're able to kind of, you get a certain feeling sometimes about someone, a good feeling or a bad feeling, either way. And it could be God's giving you that gift. And it's an important gift. Early church, there were so many people that came in with weird doctrine and they'd split the church. This gift was necessary to spot them and basically to point them out and remove them before they could do any damage. To another, different kinds of tongues. Ah, yes, highly controversial tongues. Glossa means a language or a dialect. If you skip ahead to 13, Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 13, he says, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, and so he kind of breaks it up into two different things. Early Hebrew, they had fables where they believed the angels had their own type of language. When you hear someone talk about a prayer language, something between them and God, that's a type of the gift of tongues. I think when he distinguishes between tongues of men and of angels, tongues of men, I believe, is like a foreign language. In Acts chapter 2, 120, disciples are praising God in these different languages with a fire above their head. And these foreigners are like, hey, they're praising the works of God in their own languages. It can be a language. My friend Eric was at a church, I've shared this before, where a lady got up and spoke fluent French. She's never spoken French in her life. And another person got up and interpreted the French, and this person never interpreted French in their life. And there happened to be someone there from this weird region in France who got saved, because, I mean, obviously you'd be tripping out if some white person stood up who's never been to your little region in France. And you're speaking this dialect, it's translated, and it's a special message just for this person, and they got saved as a result. He was there. I've never seen that happen. But that would be an example of tongues of men. Tongues of angels, I don't have this gift. Does anyone have the gift of tongues here? I'm just curious, as far as prayer language goes or anything like that. Does anyone have it who's present? No one? No? Okay. I've had friends who have it when they're in an extra distressful situation. They'll find that they just start speaking in their prayer language. It's like an edifying thing. 1 Corinthians 14:14 kind of distinguishes it again. It says, for if I pray in an unknown tongue, my spirit prayeth, but my understanding is unfruitful. What is it then? I will pray with the spirit, and I will pray with understanding also. So two types of prayer. One is praying like we do together, like you do on your own, normal praying, praying with understanding. The other is supernatural, praying in a spiritual prayer language, if you will. So if someone's praying in tongues in church, it always needs an interpreter. You're not allowed to stand up and just go, la, 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 you know, and just sit back down. Because that's nothing. That does nothing for anybody. But if you do that, someone should be present who can stand up and say, well, this is what he or she said. And it's like a word of encouragement for the church. So it serves to edify the body, and it also serves just to aid in your communication with God. It does not, absolutely not, signify whether you are saved or not. So often, assemblies of God believe if you don't speak in tongues, then you're not saved. No, because it says to some were given gifts of tongues. Or else we'd all be going to hell together because no one's got the gift, right? And I know that's not going to happen. So you can't equate speaking in tongues with salvation. It's a gift just like any other gift. It's good to have, I think. I don't have it personally. None of us do at this point. Maybe God has it in store for some of us. It is a bona fide gift. To another, interpretation of tongues. And again, interpretation means to explain in words, to expound. It has to go hand in hand with tongues in a corporate setting. It has to. You're not allowed to speak in tongues again in church unless there's someone to interpret it. But one and the same Spirit works all these things, distributing to each one individually as he wills. One thing I wanted to do is I wanted to add the other gifts that are mentioned in Romans 12. Some of them are reiterated. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, we covered that, let us prophesy in proportion to our faith. Or ministry, a ministry is someone who's just a servant, someone who is gifted in serving. They don't care what the task is. You'd never freak them out. You could never be like, ew, gross, I don't want to do that. Can I serve somewhere else? They're like, no, cool, I'll do it. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. Someone who's got a gift of ministry is willing to serve wherever, whenever. It's just in them. It's a natural thing that's in them. And perhaps you have that gift. You know people that do. Let us use it in our ministering. He who teaches, that's a gift of teaching, is someone who can just teach. They're able to communicate instruction in an effective manner, not boring, usually in a way that you get it. I'll contrast two people. If you listen to a guy named Bob Coy, he's got the largest Calvary Chapel. He's in Fort Lauderdale. I think there's like 70,000 people that go to his church or something crazy like that. He like sounds like he's on crack or something. He's like, you know, it's really like super, super, super fast. Energizer rabbit, just, you know, and faster than me, which is fast. Yes. And then contrast him with my father-in-law, Brian Broderson, and he's not fast at all. But they're both really good teachers. So to some, they're like, Bob Coy's crazy. I can't even understand him. He's way too fast. To some, Brian Broderson's too slow. I need Bob Coy. It's communicating instruction, whether fast or slow. It's in an understandable manner where you can apply it, which is the next thing. Gift of teaching has to go hand in hand with gift of exhortation. Because if you have instruction, like you can teach people stuff, but you can't show them how to apply stuff, then you've kind of defeated the purpose. You've got fat sheep that can't do anything. If you've only got exhortation, you've got excited sheep that they're skinny and excited. They're not filled. You need both. You need to be able to instruct and encourage in how to apply. That's what those two gifts are. And then he who gives with liberality, it's basically you just like to give. It's in you. You don't have resources. You just acknowledge that this is all God's stuff anyway. I'm happy to give it. People that are willing to give way more than 10%, that's you. You're just naturally generous. Perhaps you have that gift. He who leads with diligence, someone who people look up to, who naturally people come to with questions or problems, gift of leadership there, and he who shows mercy with cheerfulness. My Sunday school teacher just had a heart for anybody. He got so much stuff stolen from him because he just opened his house up to like troubled juveniles, and he got ripped off so many times, but he didn't care. It was just like, well, that doesn't matter. God's given me a heart for these people. And he had a gift of mercy, I believe, and was always cheerful. He was never emo about it, like, oh, poor me, got my stuff jacked again. He was just like, no, this is what I do, and I love distraught youth. That was a gift of mercy. So that kind of wraps up the majority of the gifts right there. Back to 1 Corinthians 12:12. For as the body is one and has many members, but all the members of that body being many are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, and have all been made to drink into one Spirit. The gifts were meant to bring us together. He's going to use this argument using the human body where he says, if you're a hand, you can't say you're better than a foot. If you're a foot, you can't say you're better than an ear. If you're an eye, you can't say you're better than your nose. Everything works together. Everything, if you boil it down, it all goes down to DNA. It all comes from the same thing. You are who you are because your parents exchanged chromosomes and those things split and you took a little from your dad, a little from your mom, and that made you. Everything all in one together. You had one common origin. Our common origin as Christians is Christ. He's given different gifts to the body, and we'll look at those purposes, but the point is that we use them together. The Magnificent Seven, has anyone ever seen that old? I got to use younger, trendier analogies. You know, like when you play video games and everybody's got like a gift, like someone can throw daggers, another guy can shoot and blow up people, one guy's really strong. X-Men, perfect example. You got Cyclops who can blow stuff up with his eyes, laser beam. Wolverine's got gnarly adamantium spikes, can slice you up. Storm can make storms. They've all got these different powers. All unified under one banner. This is, I can't believe I'm going here. The X-Men, which is to conquer evil. Well, in a really weird, random way, the body of Christ has all these different gifts and abilities, and we use them for purposes. One purpose we use them is to empower us, in a sense, to conquer evil as well. Look at what Jesus said, Mark 16:17-18. And these signs will follow those who believe. In my name they will cast out demons, they will speak with new tongues, they will take up serpents, and if they drink anything deadly, it will by no means hurt them. They will lay hands on the sick and they will recover. That is not saying to drink poison just because you can, because some people, believe it or not, people have done that, thinking that, well, God said so, I'm going to drink poison. No, it's just saying you're going to be unstoppable, is what that's saying. And at some point in the course of history, I assume people tried to poison the early church, and they survived it. You know, remember when the snake fastened itself onto Paul's just being a humble, he's on Malta, he's just gathering firewood, snake bites him, he just shakes it off in the fire and freaks everyone out. They start worshiping as a god because it's not normal for that to happen. That's an example of this, but the gifts are to empower us to reach the lost, basically to help us fight through the opposition. There's going to be opposition. Satan doesn't like us, he wants to stop us. That's one thing the gifts do. And then next, they edify us also. Inside-wise, 1 Corinthians 14:3-4, but he who prophesies speaks edification and exhortation and comfort to men. He who speaks in a tongue edifies himself, but he who prophesies edifies the whole church. The gifts are to build us up and to strengthen us. It's not supposed to be a one-man show where I'm just, I've got this gift. Maybe I can go over, and that's what I'm trying to produce with the cool prayer thing we do, that third song, is just people coming across, meeting new people, praying for one another, getting to know each other, and then your gifts are beginning to operate. And there's this cool little cross-modulation thing happening here. Another thing the gifts do is they unify. All the gifts are distributed by God to the church so we can use them to be empowered, edified, and in turn, unified. They bring us together. We're part of a team. And we all have gifts. Everything I looked at, everything we covered, they're all gifts that every Christian has access to. Some have these, some don't have these, but everyone as a body together has different gifts that are all meant to empower, to edify, and to unify. They're all equally important as well, and I'll breeze through this section that kind of proves that. For in fact, the body is not one member, but many. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? It's like you just can't say, well, I don't have gifts. Like, I don't have a gift of prophecy. I wish I had that. I'm just not going to go to church anymore because I don't have that gift. Got a lame gift of service or something like that. No, they're all good. They're all awesome. They all go hand in hand. They all have that purpose. Like, you can't say your eye is more important than this part. Or, you know, hey, if I had to cut something off, what would it be? You'd be like, nothing. Get away from me. It's all important. I want it all. It all works hand in hand together. This is what he's saying here. It's all important. If the whole body were an eye, where would be the hearing? If the whole body were hearing, where would be the smelling? But now God has set the members, each one of them in the body, just as he pleased. God ordains who has what gift. And the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. No, much rather, those members of the body which seem to be the weaker are necessary. Probably referring to like the insides. I mean, do you ever think about, gee, I wonder what my spleen's doing today, or I wonder how my lungs look? You know, no one cares because they're covered. You spend a lot of time looking at what your eyes, your face, your nose, your hands, your body, if you work out. Those are the things we look at. So the other things are kind of given less importance. We don't think about them as much. Remove your spleen, though, and guess what? Problems arise. Take your kidneys out, guess what? Problems arise. So he's saying even the weaker parts are important as well. Those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, on these we bestow greater honor, and our unpresentable parts have greater modesty. But our presentable parts have no need. But God composed the body, having given greater honor to the part which lacks it, that there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another. If you have gifts that you think are weak, they're vital, just as a hidden organ is vital. If you have gifts that are more scenic, maybe a gift of teaching, more people might spot that than a gift of service. Gift of service is kind of behind the scenes. You're just as important. And if you have the gift of teaching, you need to be humble also because God's given you that. You're no better than someone who's got a gift of service. He's just showing equality in all the gifts here. 25, that there should be no schism in the body. Verse 26, and if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. It's just this idea of teamwork. Well, if you hit your thumb with a hammer, your whole body hurts. Right? You're like, ah, you know, you're shaking your whole hand. All the fingers get involved as you're shaking it. You're jumping up and down. Everything gets involved. When one suffers, the whole body suffers. When one is exalted, the whole body is rejoicing with it. Now, you are the body of Christ and members individually, and God has appointed these in the church. First, apostles. Second, prophets. Third, teachers. After that, miracles. Then gifts of healing, helps, administrations, varieties of tongues. Are all apostles, are all prophets, are all teachers, are all workers of miracles? These are all rhetorical questions. Do all have gifts of healings? Do all speak with tongues? Do all interpret? But earnestly desire the best gifts, and yet I will show you a more excellent way, and we'll cover that next week. So he goes and just, apostles were important because they got everything established, the whole church. Prophets were encouraging people to look ahead because they were pointing out to the future. Teachers were just building up and edifying the body practically, and then everything falls in line. Miracles were next, gifts of healings next, helps, administrations, tongues. Somewhat of a hierarchy, but all equally important because he just established that with a whole body analogy. This is what Spurgeon says as far as unity on the gifts. This is a pretty cool quote. He says, I want every member of this church to be a worker. We do not want any drones. If there's any one of you who want to eat and drink and do nothing, there are plenty of places elsewhere where you can do it, and there are plenty of empty pews about in abundance. Go and fill them, for we do not want you. He's not very seeker-friendly, as you can see. Every Christian who is not a bee is a wasp. The most quarrelsome persons are the most useless, and they who are the most happy are peaceable, and generally those who are doing the most for Christ. His church, Metropolitan Tabernacle in London, was massive at its day, packed with people, and just telling everyone. The seeker-friendly movement, they want to keep people, you know, don't want to offend you, stay. He's pasting them. He's like, look, if you're not a worker, if you're not using your gifts, then you're of no use to us. I encourage you, conclusions now. Pray and desire that God would show you what your gifts are. Say, God, I want to know what my gifts are. Show them to me so that I can use them. Pray that. I pray that many times. I continue to pray. If there's anything else I don't have, God, show me because I want to use it. That's what they're for. And then seek to use your gifts here at Refuge and beyond. Use them inside. Use them outside. God gives you something. Look for ways. And that might not always be the immediate opportunity, but ask me. Say, hey, I think I've got a gift in doing this. Can I help here? And we'll talk about it.